punk rock music, social media content, going to get coffee, noisy dogs. This podcast has it all today, guys. We're speaking with Molly Adams, a photographer and coach based out of Los Angeles, about how she transitioned from being an event photographer, freelance photographer, shooting whatever would get her paid that week, to now consulting and coaching other business owners across heaps of different industries on how to create valuable content that connects with their audience. And not just in the usual way. She has incredible ways of bringing out the best content from each of her clients and what's unique about them, their business, and their personality, and how to use your authentic story to get more attention on your business, to create raving fans. And her platform, Kiyomara, also helps you to do that. So this was a really, really fun conversation, some great stories, some incredible insights, and a whole lot of truth. I really hope you enjoyed this one today, guys. I certainly did. Here she is, Molly Adams on Coaches to the Moon.
This is Coaches to the Moon, the only podcast you need to skyrocket your coaching business and create true impact on the world. Here's your host, Alex Morris.
Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going transatlantic today. We got Molly Adams joining us all the way from Los Angeles, a seasoned photographer in the music and event space, now coaching people on how to do their content and running a platform called Kiyomara, which I'm very interested to get into. We've been having some good chats already, so let's dig into it. Molly Adams, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Amazing, amazing. We haven't had a guest across the pond in a while, so it's really exciting to have you back. To be back speaking with America. So much of our content and knowledge in Australia comes from what we see American influencers doing, because they maybe they just have a bigger platform, they have a bigger audience. Do you ever do any work? All those things, right? All those things. America is just the powerhouse in all these areas, especially media. Do you have any international? Do you do any work internationally, or are you everything just in the U.S. right now?
Right now in the U.S., I've done work internationally, but I've been here for a bit.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so on the international front, we were talking about how you used to tour with artists. And so we'll go on a bit of a music binge for a minute there, because that's a topic I really, really love. And on your website, you got some photos that you've taken with some really prolific people like Kanye West, like Travis Barker, like Billy Idol. I was very excited about. Talk to me just a little bit, purely as a fan, about how you came up and managed to get such cool gigs shooting these prolific artists as a photographer.
Honestly, emailing cold outreach and doing good work. Back at the beginning, I would just email every single venue, every single manager, and ask to shoot a show. Now, little hack, if anybody wants to do it, email the management. It's usually on their Facebook page, and if it's a bigger act, email the opener. Can you hear that?
I can't hear that, but it's okay.
It's okay. Fine. Welcome to Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah, it's a loud city.
If you go on Facebook, you can find an artist manager's email. Email them, offer to take photos, especially if you're in a city, especially if it's an international artist. They probably didn't fly a photographer. And if it's a support act, they would love photos. Everybody would love photos. The bigger the artist, the harder it is. But I came up just by shooting a lot of festival access. So emailing publications and asking if I could shoot at a music festival gave me some of the big names, because they're already there. I don't need direct permission from them. It's just, you got to send 100 emails. Kind of like every industry, but music is that. And then once my book is strong enough, now I can email most managers and get access. I might not get paid for the show, but if I want to go to a concert, I can say, hey, this is my book, can I come out? And I can usually get a ticket.
I love that. And so your book, you mean just kind of like your portfolio of what you've done in the past, yeah? All right, sweet. So cold email, just straight hustle. You must have sent some emails that worked, some emails that didn't. Have you got any, did you learn anything about the format, the structure, the secret sauce for emails that actually get attention and get responses?
You know, I've only had success in music. I think it's because I'm pretty to the point. I'm pretty much like, this is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. And this is my work.
Yeah.
Because everyone kind of knows, if you're emailing to shoot a show, we all know why you're doing it. You like that artist and you want to shoot the show. There's no like complication. You're also not usually asking for money, which is always an easier ask. With everything else, I still have, when I've had success, it's always when I don't go through the like complicated cold email funnel and like just like write, this is what I want to do, this is what I can do. Not even a hard sell, just like, this is me, what's up?
Totally. I'm really all about that. We used to do a lot of cold email as well, and it would just be basically we would start people off when we were coming up on free trials working with us. And we'd basically open up with a good offer. Like, if I was able to help you get X, Y results in about, 7 to 10 days for free, would you be interested in hearing a little more? And then just maybe 3 or 4 more lines, and then you get a few responses. And some of them are my clients to this day, and that was like 3 years ago. But when you go in trying to skirt around the topic, the reason why you're there, people can just smell that. And they, especially business owners, artists, management, they're busy, right? They want to hear your pitch and go. So are you still cold emailing people?
Yep. I'll call you whenever I get a new idea. I'll like start cold emailing and like work on that. I'm pretty direct. I even had a successful like Instagram ad campaign around a course I had that was literally like, this is what it is. This is how much it costs. You can click the button or not. And it did really well because I think people were so sick of being sold to in a funnel. It was just like a very much a direct, like, you can pay for it or you cannot pay for it. I don't care. And
yeah.
Granted that people who gravitate towards me are kind of a little bit more like, they like the music thing. That's why my Instagram is still so heavy with the music. They want just a little bit more punk and a little bit more like, how do I do it?
I think we all need a little more punk in our lives. I used to have a lot more punk in me before I became a dad of twins, business owner, suburban. it's all gone. All the dreams.
This is off topic, but I have an 8-year-old and I got to take him to a punk show. Granted, the punk doctors are now older. They're banned. That's been a band for 40 years.
It was
about to be ends. They're called X.
I don't know.
They're like an LA band that you either, they changed your life or you've never heard of them. There's no in between.
Love it.
But we're working on a project with them and he got like all access on stage. Like it was an amphitheater. So they were like opening doors for him and he had a camera and he was like, I love concerts. And I was like, it's never going to be like that again.
You've ruined it for him. Yeah, his first ever concert. That's so funny. We've only been to the Wiggles, my daughters and I, so far. But they're starting to get into Blink-182, though. You know, they can handle that.
Listen.
They're 2 years old, but they can handle it. That's enough major key melodies for them to enjoy it. That's sick. Okay, sweet. So I really enjoy you just talking about the need to be straightforward with your marketing and your proposals for people, because in the coaching space, like I've been in this space for like 10 years now. And when we were taught so many smoke and mirrors to get people onto calls, that sort of thing. I'll just have a discovery session and I'll help you to do this thing for free. And then, is this a sales call? No, this is not a sales call, but it absolutely is a sales call. And then when people ask you a price, you say, oh, we don't need to get into that right now. And just kind of like moving people along with smoke and mirrors and red tape, that sort of thing. I really love your approach of just saying, here's what I've got. You can buy it or not. But I would challenge that probably you need a certain amount of confidence in your product and a certain amount of experience to get to that point. So I'd love to also ask you about some stuff that you've done that maybe hasn't worked so well. You mentioned that outside of the music space, you've not had as much success with the cold emailing. Is there anything that,
I've never gotten a job I've applied for ever, including when I was a punk little kid, I applied to Hot Topic. Do you guys have a Hot Topic out there?
We got similar things. We got Dangerfield, which was the old emo store I used to go to in high school.
They rejected me when I had the bangs and the blue hair. But yeah, I've never gotten a job I've applied to. I've gotten no response to 99% of my cold emails. the good thing is I built my career on that 1%, right? That sounds like a phrase. A lot of things, I think, I realized that I work best on referral, and I work best when I have, like, a proven work concept. That's where a lot of my, like, lifelong clients have come from. So I was basically tried to implement that into my sales flow. So, like, how much can I show? Yes, I say this is what I have and this is how much it costs. But a lot of it is just showing what I have and then showing what it costs and then, like, letting that sell itself. So what hasn't worked is any of the smoke and mirrors stuff. Anything more complicated than that. It works for some people and they're great at it. Like, people who are great at ebooks, I'm sure that works. I've bought courses through a funnel. Like, I have been sold on many things and it works for those people. Like, I've joined other coaches' communities because of how good they are and I love their podcast. None of that, like, and I know, you know, they're selling to you. You know when it, like, goes through that, like, oh, this is a pain point you have. Let's talk about it for 20 minutes. Oh, now actually I have a course about this. Like, you know that flow. It just hasn't been for me. And I think it's because it's not, like, in my authentic voice. My authentic voice is kind of like, this is the product, take it or leave it if you want it. Like, I do better when I used to do video clients and stuff like that. Or even, let's go back to the music, getting free access to a show, shooting the artist. I can shoot any of those artists again, often for money, because of how good my work was that got them calling me back. It's harder, I know, with, like, coaching. That's what, like, the free thing is for. It's the same thing in music photography. Just showing, yeah, like, proof of your ability. I'm trying to think of things that haven't worked. Most things that haven't worked, as you know, in these spaces, it's radio silence. So it's kind of like the story about it. It's like you spend 3 days emailing for hours and nobody emails you back ever again. And you're like, cool, that didn't work. And if you're like,
yeah,
you're like tweaking the emails every 30 emails so you don't even have a, like, system to check back. Because by the time you're at the end, you've tweaked it so much that you're like, well, I didn't really test this concept. I just hoped these worked.
That's a really interesting point as well. Because when we get people come through our company who are new to paid running ads and paid marketing and stuff, sometimes, you know, like you said, it'll be radio silence after 2 days. Every now and then a campaign just doesn't click. And they'll be like, oh, we're going to change this and this and this. And we spend $50 on this campaign. We haven't tested it yet. You know, maybe if we spent $1,000 and we had no conversations yet, maybe. But constant tweaking can actually be super detrimental because you don't actually get any data. And it's such a boring way of talking, but it's so true in terms of the marketing. Just doing something over and over again, you've got to give it enough of a chance to work or not work before you change it up. So I want to get onto the way you help people with their content and video, but I've got to just ask, as a fan, funnest interaction you've had with a really high profile person. You don't have to say their name or not, but anyone that you've just really been surprised by or you've really enjoyed spending time with them?
I'll say almost everybody I have directly worked with has actually been pretty great. I think that is because of the circles I run in. Like, I work for tour managers and producers and managers that are chill, so I don't often encounter problematic situations. But Snoop Dogg's bodyguard one time looked me up and down and said, "You're cool." I looked away, and it's his, like, lifelong bodyguard. And I was like, I've made it. I can retire now. Like, I'm good. And it proved me to be the only photographer on stage. But I was like, me?
That is good. I mean, yeah. Like, so many people, we all pay for the, as featured on Fox News and NBC kind of things. If you just said, Snoop Dogg's bodyguard called me cool, that's the only marketing you need.
I know. A lot of, like, my favorite stories are like that, or like venue security. When, like, venue security is really cool, it's always like you feel so cool. Like, I've been lifted up onto stage by security guards before just because they see me, like, sprinting through the house, or like just, like, suddenly my first, like, time working at Vegas club, I, like, had full escorts on either side of me. I was like, oh, I'm super important. Like, stuff like that always just makes me laugh. just like, you don't think about it, but it makes sense. Like, Vegas nightclubs are really intense if you have to cross the whole floor really fast.
I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. So that sounds like a pretty fast-paced lifestyle, you know, shooting, touring, events. You mentioned that you can't do that sort of thing anymore. You also mentioned that you have an 8-year-old. Was that the was your son a big part of you transitioning out of photography full time into the coaching and the platform that you now run?
Yes and no. The pandemic was a big part of me transitioning.
Right.
Right before that hit, though, I had already kind of looked back and realized I'd accomplished a lot of the goals I had set for myself, and was like, well, what's next? Because touring is really hard on your body. I was like, what can I do that it's also not a hugely profitable space. So I was like, what can I do that relates to that? And then the pandemic hit kind of when I just retired. Like, I think in like February, I was like, I'm not going to do this as much. And then it was March. So do you want to get into that transition now?
Yeah, that sounds great. Because it, like, I kind of forgot about it. We spent so little time talking about that time now. But for me, it was the same thing. I was looking for my next step out of health and nutrition coaching. It kind of never really worked. And then my wife had our twins in July 2020. So we've been in like full-blown weird times for like 2 months there when they were born. And so suddenly had all these reasons that I couldn't do the work I normally did. And it really kind of just ushered me onto this new path, which I wasn't sure was going to work. And then it worked really well. So I understand how that would have happened for you. So yeah, let's talk about that transition. So you'd just kind of retired, you know, made the decision to retire from photography. What was the gap in the sort of market or the reason that made you transition towards actually helping other people with their content?
Most immediately was that suddenly all of my clients, so I actually should back up a little more. Other than doing the music, I had been a freelance photographer, videographer for like a decade, which means if you know anyone who's freelanced in the arts, I had worked as a photographer in any capacity. I had worked for doctors, I had worked for furniture companies, I had worked for product photography. I had done everything that pays money just to support myself. So I had a like eclectic collection of clients from the years going into the pandemic, and suddenly everybody was calling me because everybody needed to film themselves, everybody needed to have an editor, or needed like just, like we were talking about before, I had clients who were doing Zoom news appearances and needed to like have me walk around their house on Zoom and find out where to put their laptop so that it looked okay, and like walk them through setting up their ring light so that they could like Zoom and like look professional. So that kind of happened. And then people were all of a sudden realizing the importance. I had brick and mortars calling me. I had people who, like personal trainers, who had a, you know, fine business in person and now had to go online. And the artists were a huge thing with touring ending. You know, that whole industry collapsed, like a lot did. Everyone needing to figure out how to do content in a way that they had never had to do before, especially because prior to that, content was really based on just documenting your life. And now our lives were like sitting in your living room. There's only so much you can do. So I started consulting unofficially and then officially. I found I really enjoyed it because I'd kind of been doing it for artists over the years. Like when you're a tour photographer, you kind of have to figure out, yes, the artists bring their own creativity and artistry to it, but you have to figure out how to document it. We were doing stories. Like I was editing stories on Premiere before there were reels and like captioning them and labeling them. So we'd already been kind of doing doc work with a really fast turnaround. Like I began shooting weddings and I was like, you guys do 6 weeks in editing? Like I have to edit that night and like send it tomorrow. So I was like, oh, there's a huge opening for just how can you be more efficient with your workflows? How can you be more efficient with your content? And how can you do it in a way that doesn't like add a new job to your life? And like going at that intersection to figure out what's up.
Yeah, no, great. That makes sense. So that's really interesting. So the point that you made about we were so used to documenting life and then suddenly we had nothing to document, I didn't even think about that because I was never much of a, when I was maybe like 24, 25, I was trying to do the whole, you know, I was influence thing. I was like, oh, I got 5,000 followers and I got $50 from a tuna company winning. But that was when I was, you know, just my fiance and I just, we could travel, do whatever we want, relatively interesting life. But yeah, that's super cool. So in terms of people creating content for their businesses from the lockdown perspective, I suppose the main thing that people struggle with, that coaches struggle with when they're creating content is trying to constantly come up with fresh new ideas that are going to be valuable and engaging for their audience, especially when a lot of us work in a home office like this. I spend like four to 6 hours a day in this office every day, and there's nothing to document, which is why I do the podcast, because now I'm using your knowledge as my content. So what were some of the tips that you gave your clients in how to create fresh and engaging content when their life, you know, isn't that exciting on the outside?
The biggest thing I'd say, and like it sounds silly, is like go back to your story, write out your story. I literally have them like, I'm like, write out every single thing you do in a day. Each one of those things is a piece of content if you like think hard enough. And like not even, and then, so kind of what I do is like write your life story, write your day, write all your hobbies. It can be even like drawing. It can be basketball. I just took up boxing. And then write that with, you know, the classic all your clients' pain points. And like I say, push that a little farther though, because let me think of a good example of this. Most of their pain points are true, but there's an even, I was just talking about weddings. Their pain points is they want to remember the day, et cetera, et cetera. Their actual pain point is they're pretty stressed with all the vendor calls that they're getting and having to pick the right one. And there's a lot of opinions. There's like a pain point before the one that you solve. And so linking what you do in a day with that previous one is usually the most relatable piece of content you can make. Like we were talking ahead of this, I gave a tip that like was one of my most successful posts years ago. And it was when I started working from home, I started going to buy a cup of coffee every morning. So it felt like I was going somewhere, and it was good investment because I'd get out of my house, I'd come home ready to work. And so many people related to that. It was like before Reels and all that stuff, but everybody was like, that's such a good idea. I'm going to start doing that, because I had a lot of like artist friends that work from home, and starting the day was the hardest part. And that's not a pain point I would have thought of as a business professional. But it is like, what's that problem before? And it's linking it with the day. And it's like, you know those things we did in school where you connect the two lines? You can connect them all infinitely and have like a lifetime worth of content. And it starts with like filming. I don't do any of this, by the way, because I decided I don't want to be a person like, and like another thing, I like have some of my clients that don't want to be online. And I'm like, that's cool. You can still have your business. And like, there's other ways to still do this kind of thing without doing it. I had a client, I had put stickers in local coffee shop mirrors. They're a coaching client. And they were getting a bunch of local people because they were just like Instagramming themselves with these like sayings on mirrors. And like, they weren't online and they got clients through just like thinking through what they do every day. And like where you can connect. I don't know, does that answer the question?
Yeah, and more. No, it's talking about, finding a pain point before the pain point. That's a really interesting one as well. Really super interesting. And one I didn't think about for weddings.
Oh, yeah. Well, the weddings, I had a wedding client earlier today. That's why I'm thinking about it. But that's like, even when I have like a client I'm coaching or consulting, depending on what term they're more comfortable with, like half of what I do is just text them every morning being like, did you make that real? Because their problem before their problem is they actually have to do it. Like, so that's also, I got into a hole in the pandemic. I ended up on a path that I try to stay away from now, in like fear coaching, because I would give them a whole social strategy and they wouldn't do it because they're too afraid to make the content or not actually gonna, like, they just don't do it. So then I was like, okay, now I have to address that problem. Like, how do I walk people through fear? I'm like, there's other people for that. That's not my job. What I can do is be like, did you film that thing yet? No, why not? What's going on?
Yeah. What I tell my clients when they're, because we do paid marketing, but people, when they're quite new, they do certainly need to generate enough organic content to figure out what works for their paid marketing. Otherwise, you're spending money to do that, which is, you know, a faster but scarier way of doing it. And you see people just getting paralyzed to post each video, or they're scripting it, and they send me photos of their camera roll with like 47 takes of the same video. And what I tell them is like, that's completely fair enough that you feel like that. But there's some crazy number of like tens of thousands of Instagram posts go out every second of the day. Basically, no one's going to see this content. Like, maybe six people see it. And if they don't like it, they're not going to start clicking on your page and ruining your life. They're just going to scroll past it, because there's enough content out there that you can throw absolute garbage into the universe every day. And most likely, it's not going to affect anyone's life negatively, especially yours, as long as you're having a go.
And like, honestly, the content I watch and I find myself this as a consumer is usually the ones that somebody had an idea while they're walking to their car. The sound quality is terrible. It's from below. And they're like, this is my thought on this thing. It's not like in their home office with perfect lighting and seven like beautiful graphics coming up. Those I usually feel like an ad now. So I scroll by. It's the ones that are just like, like, I have clients where I'm hired as a videographer and I still shoot it on an iPhone because I'm like, this doesn't need to be like so intense.
Totally. Progression over perfection, right? What's up, guys? Alex here. If you're enjoying the episode, please don't forget to give us a subscribe on whatever channel or platform you're watching or listening to this. Really helps us to make an amazing show every week. Thank you so much. Back to the episode. Yeah, no, that's mad. All right, sweet. So you're now post-pandemic, everyone's making content differently and you're still coaching. Everything's opened up quite a lot more. Now, I suppose, you know, one of the phrases you use maybe on your website or Instagram was saying that you help brands find their secret sauce to really create. What is the best thing about their business that they can capture on film? What's the process of helping brands to really figure out what's going to pop off for them, and what's the best way of getting that out on content?
Honestly, it's like oftentimes just a mirror perspective, or like somebody else like me watching them. Like, I often just like listen to what they're doing, look at all their stuff, and I can almost immediately see what makes them different in their space. And like how that is interesting to a consumer or interesting to a person. And it's in their story. Like, if you go to like any YouTube, like finding your brand story, whatever, anything that makes you write out like why you got where you are is going to be that. Like, when I was selling myself as an event photographer, or even if I still do, I say I come from a music background because you already know that style. It gives me a perspective and an experience that other photographers don't have, if that's what you're looking for. And if you're not, that's fine. And like kind of going through that, it's like what you first wanted to bring up, like, and then looking at things through that lens, really, like I work with any of my clients, whether they're a dentist, like they're an artist. Like, how would I promote that record? How do you get the pre-sales? All these things. And that's just what works for me, which is why my Instagram still looks like a music photographer's page. But it's just finding out what that combination of things are that you do. Like, were you almost were you a varsity basketball player? Maybe you're dribbling while you coach or whatever it is. That makes it interesting. And also like what drives you, and not in that like surface question, like, I want to change the world. It's like, that kid told me I sucked in second grade and haven't gotten over it. So I'm going to post content that makes me look better. That might be it.
Yeah. I mean, because it's very easy to blend in, right? Very easy to say the things that you think you should say, because that's what made other people successful, such as, I want to change the world. I'm here for impact, not for money. And it's like, well, you kind of need the money as well. Like, you do need to, you're not here just for impact. So yeah, that we call it red ocean, blue ocean in our marketing company. Have you heard that term before? Blue ocean. So sure. So it's, the analogy is that basically it's a really pleasant analogy that we as coaches, business owners, marketers are hungry sharks, and prospects and audience are fish. It's a horrible analogy, but we feed off of them. We use them to feed ourselves. So basically, you know, we need to capture some of these people. When you're in a big red ocean, like being a photographer, then yeah, there's a million clients out there who can work with. But the problem is there's also going to be a million photographers, sharks, with a lot of them with bigger budgets and bigger audiences than we have. So all the fish get eaten, ocean turns red. Lovely analogy. But the best way to get down into a blue ocean where there's less fish and therefore less sharks is basically, yeah, to niche or niche yourself down one or two steps. So photographer, massive ocean. Music photographer, smaller ocean. Folk music photographer in Austin, Texas, that sort of thing. Maybe that's a big niche because there's a lot of them. But genre-specific music photographer takes you down to, oh no, I won't be able to shoot the rap, you know, the rapper that comes out. No, but when a folk musician comes into town, you are there. They come to you because you're the big shark in that little pool now. And it's actually by, you know, yeah, the secret sauce that you said, we just say it in terms of niching down, finding that one unique thing. And so for yourself, photographer with a music background, super punky, super brash, straight to the point, it's going to be very different from everyone who's just trying to please every single client who comes through the door. And so I see that that's probably why that's worked so well for you.
Yeah, and it also gives you like a lens to talk about everything through, right? Like if your niche is like, give me a niche. Don't want to.
Yeah, dog groomers.
You're a dog groomer. I could like go, well, that one. Yeah, I could spend my whole day in the city like filming dogs. I know you're not supposed to film other people's dogs. It's like kids, but like, whenever you're out, film other dogs and just like write that haircut, like write your haircut. Like you can do like pretty much anything that like relates to that without too much effort. And like you're speaking to your audience, you're not off topic, you're not putting in that much effort, and it's kind of funny. But you can like do, yeah, you run everything through that lens and like it makes sense. But like, when I even talk to my clients, I'm like, go beyond your job title. Like, that's why I do all your interests, because you're a dog groomer now. But if you're also like always kind of talking about your interests and stuff, you can kind of go into any career path. Like, say you're a dog groomer who got sick of that and wants to do something else. You can still take your people with you on that journey, and they would love to go with you on that because they love you for you, not like just the blow dries you do on the poodles.
Yeah. Super important for, you know, at the level of business that, you know, myself and you and a lot of the audience are at, where we're still the face of the brand and people are generally coming to work with us, not with the company. Like there's a combination of people needing to like you and also like what you do. And yeah, resonating with people. When there's so many choices of photographers or coaches out there or marketers, just resonating with someone on a personal level is super duper important. And I think you used the word authenticity before. Like, I'm pretty sure you've got a dog on your lap right now.
I have.
Yeah. But like, I think that the authenticity factor really hopped up when everyone was forced to start working from home, because suddenly you saw everyone's bedroom. Like, not everyone's got the space for an office where they can have like a custom neon light. The other side of my room is absolute chaos over there because all of my stuff gets shoved over there when I do a podcast. But the authenticity factor is super duper important, and I'm glad you brought that up. So let's talk about your platform, Kiamara. Kiamara is...
Let's go there, but I'll say one more to your last point real quick.
Oh, please.
If any of your listeners like look at my Instagram right now, like I run... It's under one company, but I technically have 5 front-facing companies. None of them are represented on that page, but all of them, and they go to different clients, doctors, conferences, weddings, and it's all through the, I always tell all my clients, I come from a music photo background, so you go to my page and it's authentic to that 100%, so all of the other businesses can work off of that.
Yeah, right. So when someone says, you know, have you found success with, you know, have you found success for another spinal surgeon before? You can say, no, I haven't, but this is how I work and this is what I do, that sort of thing. And hopefully this gives you enough confidence to take
and
you on board.
On that, like on that sale, I'm super authentic. I'm really interested in science. That's actually why I like working with doctors. And I've worked a few like medical sales conferences. So I literally just start talking to them about their tech and how I'm actually interested in it. And I can book that client because they're like, oh, you are interested in what I'm saying and therefore you'd be good to make my content. And it's just authenticity. There's no sales in that. It's like, I know that they need to sell this machine and I would like to do that. Kiyomara is the kind of like the business entity.
Okay.
That like houses, it keeps expanding because social media keeps expanding. You know, it's like a nebulous slime ball. Kiyomara is a, it started because I needed a more professional front-facing brand than my music. If you go to even like my straight portfolio website, it's going to be very different. And it works really well for getting me concerts. It does not work very well for getting me corporate clients. And I was learning that because I would cold email them and they would say, thanks, we're going to go another direction. At best, the best version of that was them saying, thanks, we're going to go another direction. But I had all this material, so I was making all these sub pages as we do, you know, like custom web pages for the client just to send them that. And I kind of was like, wait, let's do. So that's how that website became a thing. And then as I was working in those spaces, I found this. It started honestly with conferences because I'd done large branded events, again, through the same music lens. They want a music photographer shooting because these big brand activations now are basically music festival parties. And then conferences, I started booking and realizing I could approach them like I would an artist, and nobody was doing that. Most conference coverage is like either a live stream or like a recap set to music that's like kind of awkward. I was like, what if we make as much content as we can out of this event? So cutting down speaker moments as reels, getting interviews with them backstage as reels, getting them, asking them their questions right before they go on stage as reels, getting like fashion videos if it's a convention that would be one like that, getting as just using it as like a content grab opportunity. So I still, every time I'm pitching a client, they're like, well, how many deliverables is this? I'm like, I actually don't build to the deliverable because I'll do as much as I can. We'll edit as much as we can. That's still good. But looking at things like that, and then from there, when you know you make that much content, you end up with a ton of clients who suddenly realize they need video content because you just gave them all this clips of them speaking. And that like landed me in all these other industries, particularly medicine. And now I'm advising them on how to do that in their own offices or making it for them if they're in Southern California or New York. But I prefer to just be like, hey, you probably already are paying a social media marketing agency. You're probably already doing these things. Let us just support you in getting your marketing agency more material to promote. So like I often like, I think some marketing agencies think I'm coming in as a competitor. I'm like, no, I'm just about to get your ad material way better. Like, I don't want to run any of it. I don't want to be posting anything, but I can like deliver or help them get them. Like I'll even, so for some of my clients, I coordinate their photographers. I'll find them in their city, set them up with their shoot. I'm like, if you're going to do it right and authentically and like no more like Canva templates, right? And just like, let me hand your social media marketing agency or your marketing department, because some of these people, like some doctor's offices in LA have like a whole floor. Let me just hand them a bunch of content instead of these like marketing graphic designers trying to figure something out.
Yeah, great. Did that and make- as
part make any sense? Because it's kind of all these things. A lot of my businesses are like responses to things I was already doing, and like, how do I contain it in a way?
Well, that's the best way to do business, right? Is to, you know, what I did in my, what I talk about when my health coaching business never popped off the ground was because I was creating the program that I wanted to create, but I wasn't. What you've done is you have created an initial product to fill a gap, and then you've noticed problems that that created, and then you help them fill that gap, and you are here, you're listening to your audience and your customers and creating a business from that. So it's the best way of creating business, because now they're helping you to figure out what to do next, and you already know that there's a market for it because they've helped you create it. So that's I loved your concept on the conference and just taking something that some people could see as quite stuffy or quite corporate and turning that into great content. Reminds me a lot of kind of what Gary Vaynerchuk was doing like 5 years ago that everyone thought was so revolutionary. Just documenting things and just having, just being interviewed on a daily basis. I mean, how much do you resonate with him and his message these days? Because he's very much all about just work until your eyes bleed, hustle, post, just be everywhere all at once. I struggle with that concept because I don't know, it just doesn't fit my idea of a fun life. But how do you resonate with Gary Vaynerchuk? Because your content style seem quite similar.
That's a great question. Because I haven't thought about him. I definitely was like, listened to the things 5 years ago, right? I definitely was like on the internet, in the space, being like absorbing that information from him and like across. If you were getting fed any like entrepreneur content, you were getting fed that information. And I definitely like took a lot in. What I really enjoyed about him back then was, because I think that's how my brain works, like when he had guests on and he was just finding like five new ways that they could market, I loved that. Now I don't think I don't relate to him much anymore because I haven't listened to him. I'm sure he's still spot on. There's no shade to him at all. But I think that there is a level of balance, and I think that like, it's not like work until your eyes bleed. It is when you're launching a product. I will say, if you want to launch a successful new endeavor and you aren't putting your all into it, it's going to take a long time and probably not be as successful. The goal, at least that's how I think about it, like the goal is to get it off the ground so I can work significantly less. But I'm not going to like for the conferences, when I was first rolling that out, I was shooting every conference myself because I needed to set the bar for like how it looked. And I was the one that had like, I saw how it could work, and I needed to show something to another videographer to hire them out to do it, which means I was there for the 12-hour days across different industries, right? And then I did all the editing. Now I don't do all of everything, and I can breathe and like live my life and come up with new ideas. But I think in the launch period, you have to be all in. But it doesn't need to be in the way, it needs to be in a way that's true to you and that works for you. Like I was all in on that. It was nowhere on my social media, right? Still in ads, still on like SEO and still in certain places, still on LinkedIn. But it's not on my Instagram. It doesn't need to be like, I think he says post like 10 times a day or something. Like,
yeah. He used to say like 100 pieces of content a day across like all your different platforms, like, you know, 10 platforms, 10 pieces, that sort of thing. Just like,
but
crazy.
If that's like your goal, then go for it. Like, yeah. You know, like if you want to be the next, like whatever, then do that. And your goal is like 20 clients that pay all your bills. There's a different option. And like, it just comes down to like what your goals are. Yeah, like I have clients that I do have to tell, like you have to post a reel every day because what they want requires. But for not everyone is that. I think it's like, it's doing, like that's why part of my like intake thing is like, write down what you do in a day. Write down what you actually enjoy doing. Like I like hated being on camera for a long time because I was like this paralysis, and now I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
But I did a lot of things without that, and it was still successful. It's just like, you still have to do things, though. I think that's the part a lot of people forget when they launch their new thing, is they're like, I'm going to be self-employed, and like, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I've been self-employed. That's why I've shot everything that pays money.
Yeah. We've all been there. I saw when my daughters were first born, I was building, you know, really basic, like one page websites for $200 for anyone in the local area. I did like jewelry stores. I did like beauty therapist. I had a tattoo studio, personal trainer, like a dog collar, you know, manufacturer, all sorts of stuff like that.
And I bet you learned a lot about marketing at that then, though, right?
Yeah, I learned what not to do. So that was good. And well, it led me into, you know, through building the website, I knew how to run ads, but I didn't know how to market myself as a guy who ran ads. So I started doing the websites, and then I'd say to people, okay, well, now no one's going to visit your website because they don't know how to find it. So let's start running ads to your website. And that's how I got my first like five clients. And then I realized which ones were the best clients to work with. And that was generally coaches and consultants who had appointments with people and could actually sell their product. And then they got a higher return from each sale so they could stick around and do more marketing. And therefore, over time, roll into the business that I have today. And yeah, it's just, you know, failure lesson, hustle season, relaxing season over and over again, and just try to have more ups than downs across the whole journey, right?
Isn't that it? And I will say, I agree with that. I will only take on a product client that's not like a person that I'm selling if they like are actually a person. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
they're selling a thing that they made. Then like, okay, I can still use you. That's why corporations have like massive marketing departments, because it's really hard to sell a physical product. That's not like it.
It's not like, you know, I used to own a cafe and I used to, you know, make my money $5 at a time. And that's a really scary way of making, you got to do such volume and you got to make sure that everyone comes back and you're like, tens of thousands of dollars in the hole before you sell your first coffee, and then you still have bills every week. So that's why I love the coaching space, because while it is a very hyper competitive space with plenty of well-meaning people who are not doing very well at it, you can really, for lack of a better word, fuck it up for like 5 years and not have serious repercussions because you haven't put much money into developing a physical product, and you can generally do it by yourself, and then the ROI can be great off the back end. You've just got to, you know, basically do what Molly's telling you to do, be authentic, market the unique parts about yourself, and just care about the content you're putting out. Really great information today, Molly. Thank you so much for sharing everything you've got. It's been really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So I didn't give you that much of a chance to pitch Kiyomara. And we're not much of a pitching platform, but in terms of content coaching, you mentioned that you can help people just consult on what they're doing wherever they are in the world. You can't do it for them unless they're in LA. But is there anything that, you know, any pieces of content or anything that you've got that could maybe help out the audience just to, you know, have a little step into what you're doing?
I actually check out Kiyomara, check out like my Instagram, shoot me a message with any questions. I'll respond. I'll do like a mini 30-second audit with like a tip with anybody. I don't really have much to sell at this moment, unless you did want to work one-on-one, but like just ask me a question and I'll answer. That's the best way.
That is the best way. I 100% believe in that. And infinitely better. 30 seconds with you, infinitely better than having an ebook that you wrote for, you know, an audience of 1,000 people. It's there's some other questions I wanted to ask, but we didn't get into because we're having a great conversation. But that's okay, because that's life. And we'll have to have you back on in another year's time when you've just blown up the whole space, Molly.
Thanks.
You're an absolute monster. It's been so much fun having you on today. Anyone who's listening, not live today, but on the recording, love you for that. Thank you so much. I'll be back on Thursday with another episode of Coaches to the Moon podcast. Until then, thank you for listening. Much love. Peace out.
Coaches to the Moon will be back next week. Until then, reach us on Facebook at To The Moon Digital Marketing.